funny shit that took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
There's only one place to start, lads, and that is the bombshell that the Sunday Independent broke yesterday, that Jack McCaffrey is stepping away from the Dublin squad. Strong indications that he's going to even retire full-time. So it's not just for a year. He did that before. There are strong indications that he's going to retire from intercounty football and focus on his club. Bit of a surprise here. Then you find out that he's working in Kilkenny. He's a doctor. It's nothing to do with the coronavirus or anything like that. He's a paediatric doctor, as far as I heard. And they just work long hours, Conan. And there's nothing really to see here other than he's bloody won everything that there is in the game. What else is there for him to achieve? Literally nothing. He's never going to do a five in a row again. He's won Player of the Year, Young Player of the Year. He's won four All-Stars. He's won, I don't know how many Leinster titles, National Leagues. What's left in it for him outside of winding down and maybe enjoying his life and having a work-life balance?
Yeah, and he's already proven he can go away for a year, travel as far as he wants, and then come back and still be even better. So he doesn't even have a comeback motivation to prove people that he can still do it. It's obviously a huge loss for GA. I remember you talking about him last year, just in sort of terms of like being one of the best players you've ever seen, and definitely like probably the best player in the game at the minute. So it's a huge loss in that sense, and a huge loss for Dublin. But I can sort of definitely sympathise with him. Like, if he's in Kilkenny, and like think how much that they're given. Like, and like obviously you're talking about working long hours, and it's not even just, he was talking about like finding a pitch in Kilkenny and doing all these runs and stuff. You know, the one days he couldn't come up, so. It's just absolutely flat out, and maybe he's just at a stage where he's thinking, you know what, I can't bother to do this 40 hours a week or whatever the amount of training is.
Yeah, Chad Fitzpatrick, who we had on the show over during the lockdown doing the nostalgia shows, he finished at 26 as well. He'd won absolutely everything that's left in the game, and he was like, to me, when you've climbed Everest a good few times, there's nothing really left to climb, Conor. Maybe that's it. I don't know. I think it's just his life situation now, rather than, you know, he's achieved everything that he's wanted to achieve.
Isn't it great that like the likes of Chad Fitzpatrick and Jack McCaffrey, by the time they're, before they're even 27, they've won so much, you know, that they can decide, oh, I've seen it all and I've done it all, and I'm just going to give it up now. But that's entirely it. Like, I mean, I've... My first reaction, I think a lot of counties outside Dublin got a bit giddy. Oh, this is great news! But then, to be honest, I was a little bit disappointed to be just not going to see him for, if it is true, not going to see him for the next few years. Because as Conan hinted at there, you're talking about like one of if not the best player of the game in the last 5 or 10 years, one of the most impactful players of the game, some of the most brilliant individual performances that I can think of, and he's the only defender that I can think of that was so good that requires the top counties to have man mark him or come up with a specific plan for him. He's that effective going forward. So, but listen, Jack was always, you always got the impression with Jack McCaffrey that he was he was of his own mind. He kind of was never afraid to kind of make big decisions like that, like as he did with stepping off for a year a few years ago. So listen, all I can say is best of luck to him. But big loss for Dublin, obviously, but big loss for the GAA as well.
Yeah, no, it is. Well, like, they won an All-Ireland without him in 2016. So it's not like Dublin, you know, don't have the strength and depth to be able to handle this kind of thing. They won them without Dear McConnelly, Rory O'Carroll, you know, they won them without different players over the years. But there's no doubt he's going to be a big loss for Gaelic football fans. Like, the 1-3 he scored in the drawn 2019 final, like, Dublin don't win the five in a row without Jack McCaffrey. That's a fact. That is a fact, because Kerry had them on the rack, and the only player at that stage of the game was standing up to Kerry and keeping Dublin in the game was Jack McCaffrey. He could have won Player of the Year in 2018. Remember, he won Man of the Match against Galway in the semi-final and Man of the Match in the final against Tyrone. If that's not enough to get you Player of the Year, I think Brian Fenton won it that year, but Jack had won it before that. Interestingly enough, he was his first ever All-Ireland final. He was taken off at half-time. He was off... straight away at halftime. He was only 19 that year, and I remember Kieran Kilkenny went off in that same All-Ireland after 42 minutes. They were only young fellas, straight out of minor, I'm pretty sure, and did brilliant Leinster Championships, and they went off the boil completely due to their age. But it was interesting, 2013, both McCaffrey and Kilkenny are off, both of them are off the field after the 42nd minute, and you know, maybe they learned the hard way that this is a huge step up, you know, playing Mayo. I think it was Kevin McLaughlin roasted Jack Conan that day. But like, I mean, he has no, that was his first All-Ireland, and then his last All-Ireland is the drawn match where he scored 1-3. So like, I mean, there's been ups and downs since then, but that's how he kind of finished up, because he went off at halftime actually in the 50, he went off early in the 2015 final, went off in the All-Ireland final replay in 19. He's had a topsy-turvy experiences in All-Ireland finals.
Yeah, I think he went off after a few minutes in 2017 as well, the one they won by a point against Mayo. I remember Paul Flynn came on for him, so real checker, and the ones he did play usually got man of the match.
yeah.
But it's it does show the transition. Like, yeah, you're talking about him getting roasted by Kevin McLaughlin in 2013, but then fast forward 6 years, and I did stats on him in last year's All-Ireland final, and he touched the ball 3 times in his own half, whereas he was man of the match. He was just completely dictating the play, like, you know, playing wing back and just driving at Kerry, like, you know, and just getting everybody in the country to sit up and take notice. It wasn't him going out and worrying about a skillful wing forward. It was him going out trying to win a game.
Well, that's the thing, because wing forwards are supposed changed. And like, I mean, all the defensive duties pretty much were taken off him. And the way the game was evolving suited him down to the ground. He, by his own admission, he wasn't the best man marker. But that kind of job for a wing back became redundant, the marking job, because players dropped back and helped you out. And he was just used as this like kind of catapult to kind of break through lines. And you know, when you have his pace and his attacking instinct with very little defensive responsibilities, that's where Jack McCaffrey kind of flourished. And that's why, you know, maybe just the era across which he played. Now, he'd be brilliant in any other era, but at the same time, without potentially getting exposed, you know, at the defending side, it definitely suited his game, Connor. But there is actually a funny quote for Peter Caffrey today. He was, you know, given his thoughts, he said, "It's immeasurable how much of a loss he's going to be. He's one of the first names on the team sheet. And because a lot of this year's championship is going to be played at Croke Park, he's one of those guys whose skill set gives him a huge advantage playing in Croke Park." And I was like thinking, what bloody year is not a year that Dublin are going to play all their games at Croke Park? His skill set is perfectly suited to Croke Park, but that's like every year. I don't know what Pillar's talking about there, but he's right. It is immeasurable how much of a loss he's going to be. And I genuinely think he's the most likable Dublin player across the country. And it's not a retirement that anybody wants to see, even his rivals.
No, I don't think so. As I said earlier on, people might have got giddy for a couple of minutes, but then realised that like they're actually being deprived of watching somebody as good as Jack McCaffrey. You know, you kind of mentioned it there, like the game had evolved to a level where you know, he didn't have, like, Jack McCaffrey was never the man who was going to stick tight to his, you know, his marker and be stuck in the defensive half, you know, for the entire game. The way the game developed suited him absolutely perfectly. But just on that, while he wasn't a great man marker, like, I think McCaffrey has spoken about this himself in the past, that, like, he was still a pretty good defender especially when he got into close contact, really good at kind of turning over the ball and stuff like that. And I think he said that he used to, because he's known for kind of his drives up the pitch and the scores he used to get, he used to kind of pride himself when, you know, his teammates might congratulate him for turnovers or something like that. But just when you were mentioning it there as well, the one thing I can hold against Jack McCaffrey is he's never done it in a final against Mayo. So he was like, in 2013, he missed the final in 2016, and albeit an anterior cruciate ligament, he had to go off after a few minutes in 2017. So that's a regret that Jack will probably always carry with him for the rest of his life.
Yeah, it'll keep him awake at night, you know, when he's dreaming about the 5 in a row. There's no doubt about that. Poor Jack, how will he ever cope? Come here, the inter-county schedule was obviously announced last Friday. It was last Friday, wasn't it? Friday's my day off, and I kind of take a break from GAA, but it was not last Friday. So there's no real standout in this. The All-Ireland final is the 19th of December. Like, this is really novel. Like, I mean, this year is just going to be incredible. And the Joe McDonagh Cup and the Liam McCarthy, the All-Ireland hurling final, is on the 13th of December. So, like, I mean, talking about kind of boring months, and, you know, after the club provincial finals at the start of December, geez, we really have a lead into Christmas now. The New York aren't involved. London might be involved. They have to make a decision on that. The draw is Munster versus Connacht and Leinster versus Ulster. So that's pretty much the takeaway, Conan, from that, from a football point of view.
Poor Desi Farrell, because it's just everything is just stacked up against him. Taking the job in December, the coronavirus hitting, the whole season being cancelled, Jack McCaffrey leaving, and now it's straight knockout. And it's not like, you know, Dublin before have always had a chance for a quarterfinal and a Super 8, so to sort of get themselves up to that speed. They're going from probably what will be Westmeath, Leash and Meath into Ulster champions in the semi-finals, straight knockout. You know, so it is a bit more perilous for them this year, and like there's a bit of excitement in that sense. But I was looking at that, you're talking about December 19th, so I was looking at that thinking, I nearly want the championship to be this time all the time, because I've never looked forward to a winter as much as I am looking forward to this one.
Yeah. But okay, you might be feeling sorry for Desi Farrell. I'd have a little bit more sympathy for Westmead, who have one shot in a knockout and it's in Croke Park against Dublin. So, like, I mean, they know they're screwed. Like, I mean, whatever you say on a normal year, you'll say, right, look, we'll go up and make a good account of ourselves and we'll regroup for the qualifiers. Like, how are their heads now, knowing that they've won game in October and they're gone out for the year? Now, they are in the shake-up for the league of potentially getting promoted, so that's where their focus will lie, you know. But then the club matches are leading into that as well, so it's definitely not easy. I would have more sympathy on Westmeath than I would for Dublin. He's getting a nice little warm-up into that All-Ireland semi-final. And like, I mean, it depends who comes out of Ulster. They'll still be strong favourites, no matter who that is. An interesting early match is Cork away to Kerry, lads, or mm-hmm. Kerry away to Cork, and that's on a they have a home and away in agreement. There's talk that Donegal and Tyrone will be played in Croke Park. There's no talk of Cork and Kerry because Páirc Uí Chaoimh is but easily big enough. That's a huge banana skin for Kerry here. Like, Cork are a very improving team at home, a huge rivalry. Like, you could potentially see Kerry out in the middle of October.
Yeah, and what a shock that would be. Like, I mean, every year, because they inevitably meet, the Cork and Kerry have, there's a target for Cork and Kerry in the background. They know they're going to meet Cork at some stage or Kerry at some stage. But they also know that, like, there's probably going to be a fallback as well, that if they lose, it's not the end of the world. Whereas obviously this year is completely different. Now, I didn't see a whole lot of Cork before before lockdown, obviously, because they were in Division 3. But, like, by all accounts, it's a very promising campaign. It looked like dead set for promotion. And, like, there was signs towards the end of last year that they're clearly an improving outfit. So while I'd still, like, I'm still fully expecting Kerry to come out of it, even though it isn't Páirc Uí Chaoimh. But it does, like, the thing with the Cork-Kerry games the last couple of years, that there hasn't been that kind of sense of buzz or anticipation about it, because, well, inevitably you expected Kerry to win, but also you knew that there was a fallback option there. There's neither for either team, plus Cork are far closer to Kerry's pitch, I would imagine, than any time maybe in the last 4 or 5 years. So, like, of all the games, definitely Donegal-Tyrone, but that's right up there as well.
Yeah, so they're a good start to them, those two ones. The hurling, the standout points in the hurling championship is that Lee McCarthy isn't a straight knockout. So you have a second chance with All-Ireland quarterfinals. We know that's only because there's, what, 8 or 9 teams, 10 teams. They can afford to have a backdoor. The football can't. So, like, that's all understandable. An interesting one, the draw was made for this, and Limerick have to play Clare. The winners of that play Tipperary, and the winners of that play Waterford or Cork, who've gone straight into a semi-final. So, like, Jesus, if Limerick retain their Munster title, they're definitely doing it the hard way. And another important one is that their quarter-final against Clare is also a league final. So Limerick have been declared Division 1A champions and Clare Division 1B champions. So they're not only playing to get into the Munster semi-final, they could be league champions and Munster semi-finalists as well. So that's an interesting one. The Joe McDonagh Cup, as I mentioned already, that final is going to be played the same day as the All-Ireland, which is fantastic. Mm. Usually the Joe McDonagh Cup winners get back into the All-Ireland. I think the Joe McDonagh Cup players would take sharing All-Ireland final day, you know, over potentially going back into it, given the year that's in it, Conan. You know, I see no complaints about any of this. I'm happy. Their time is very, very limited. They've given the club that little bit more. There's not much they can do.
Yeah, I was actually wondering how you would feel as a Leash man, and obviously the big day against Dublin last year. And that's been taken away, and, you know, like, the Joe McDonagh Cup teams have proven that they can play at that level. But you're right, like, the fact that it's this year, and the fact that they're getting into Liam McCarthy next year, then I suppose that does make up for it. I did just have a little bit of sympathy for them that they're not going to be involved this year.
Yeah, well, look, again, but I suppose time constraints. I haven't heard much given out. Usually the weaker counties can be a little bit like the club, where they're up in arms about things when they're, you know, they seem to be slighted a little bit. But I haven't heard any kind of complaining about that. We're going to be very busy, right? So the provincial championships will be run off on a week-on-week. leading to the Munster and Leinster finals on the weekend of the 14th and 15th of November. The Connacht football final is also going to take place that weekend, while three other provincial football championship finals will be played the following weekend. We have three provincial finals. We have the Munster, Ulster and Leinster on the same weekend, and we have the Munster and Leinster hurling finals on the same weekend as the Connacht football final. We're not going to be able to travel to games anyways, lads. It's just going to have to be in front of the television to try and stay on top of everything. But look, I'm looking forward to this. The only thing I'm worried about is potentially it being called off. Like, I mean, that wouldn't that be such a disaster if we saw a spike? Because it is a bit away. Like, October is, I don't want to be kind of all doom and gloom and thinking very negatively about it, but it is a bit down the road and a lot can happen in the meantime.
Yeah, and I suppose conditions, we've talked about this already, and I think kind of health experts have warned about it as well, is that like conditions at that time of year, you're coming into flu season, you know, you're coming into, people are likely to be a bit more kind of susceptible to picking up something at that time of year. So listen, we've been through so much, so fingers crossed. But just looking at the schedule as well, I mean, like there's been a couple of years where you've had three provincial finals maybe on the one weekend, and we've been up in arms because there's a load of free weekends that haven't been availed of, and you're trying to fit three matches into one weekend, whereas this year it's absolutely necessary. So I know about you, we'll probably be crying out for a break, or a week or two break come the middle of November.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I mean, look, it's going to be exciting, there's no doubt about that. So it's definitely something to look forward to. The GPA are happy with the structure anyways. Paul Flynn said, considering the unique circumstances, we broadly welcome today's master inter-county fixture announcement, which addresses and delivers upon some of those. The season will be completed in the calendar year, a closed season after the conclusion of the 2020 inter-county season, and the commencement of the 2021 season will be built into the calendar, and players will have at least 3 weeks, and in many cases 4 weeks, between their involvement in club championship and the first inter-county championship match. So they're happy enough with the way it's going. CPA, not so happy. They've written to Tom Ryan, and they're looking for sanctions for counties who are in breach of December 14th date, because there's obviously talk of some counties being back together. They're not supposed to be. September the 14th is the date they're given. And the more you think about it, I suppose, you know, it's not that bad. September 14th until October 17th is the start of the National League, and then it's two more weeks until the start of the Championship. So outside of your semi-finalists and finalists, look, it's not ideal, but it's what they have, and they're breaking it. So the problem here is that Croke Park are not intending on sanctions for counties breaking this September 14th. And it's like, what's the point in giving a date, Conan, if you don't want to punish counties who are flaunting it? So John Horan says, we're not intending to give sanctions. He said, we'd like people to call them out, but we're not actually intending to pose any penalties. Like, what's the point of that nonsense? Like, so the CPA have written to Tom Ryan and have said that any county in breach of it, they want a removal from all 2020 competitions. Now, I don't know. Like, I mean, I think that's a bit severe, but at the same time, some sort of, because what the guilty parties here are county board officials. What scares county board officials? Money. They can't raise it. In often cases, they're useless, and they depend on handouts. You cut that off and they'll soon pull in line. I think, you know, a removal from 2020 competitions, that's punishing players. You know, I don't think that's the right way to go about it. But there absolutely has to be sanctions. It's crazy that there are no sanctions.
Like, if there's no sanctions or punishment, then there's no rule. Like, the reason you have a rule is if you break it, then you get punished. But now if you're not going to be punished, then it's not really a rule. It's almost like, it's just a suggestion. You shouldn't go back until September 14th. But if you do, then we'll not do it. What's the point of me calling somebody out? Like, why does John Horan want me to call somebody out if he's not going to do anything about it anyway?
Yeah. Do you know? When they gave the dates for back to play and opening your pitches, were there sanctions about that? Or like, why didn't counties just say, forget about that? I'm not following that the way they're just choosing not to follow this. How is one rule followed to the letter of the law? Like, you know, that it was obviously it's serious enough. And on the other hand, you know, this 14th is just like, it doesn't even exist. It's like, it's nothing.
I don't know. But like, the problem there is that the CPA then have gone too extreme, you know, to a stage where nobody's going to listen to it. So like, that, like, fair enough, I know, like, you want a black and white rule, but you're saying, like, throw them out of the competition. That's, again, it's just not reasonable. Like, if they had to come forward with some sort of reasonable suggestion, then it would have been listened to a bit more, I think, or especially by the public. And, like, we're talking about Jack McCaffrey there. What I find very interesting is that, 2.5 months before they're supposed to be back, he feels the need to say that he's retiring.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, why is he saying that now and not September 14th or whatever? Like, maybe he just wants to give him a heads up, but I just wonder how many teams are starting to talk and starting to meet. And it just seems very early for Jack McCaffrey to make a decision like that.
Well, the GPA, Paul Flynn is complaining about the September 14th date. So he wrote to the members, he said, a return to inter-county training prior to September 14th, once a club championship involvement comes to an end, remains on our agenda. The GPA will continue to engage with the GA on this matter and also on the provision of COVID-19 protocols, etc. Right, so Paul Flynn makes a point, right? So the championship in most counties is starting on July 31st, 1st of August. And most of them are having that and a backdoor. So you'll play your first match on the weekend of the 1st of August, whatever that weekend is, the 31st of July. And then you'll have a backdoor, sometimes 1 week later, sometimes 2 weeks later, grand. So half the clubs in the county could be out in mid-August. And you've no team then to train for until mid-September. So there is a point to be made there. Like, I mean, county players will be just scratching their arses and not being covered by insurance when the best thing for them to do, because, Connor, there'll be no club league games while the county championship's going on. You know what I mean? It's very complicated, lads. You know what I mean? And it's kind of a tug of war between everything. And the CPA saying no training for September 14th, that's lousy on maybe half the county players in the county that have no team to train with for a month. And with very important matches coming up the following month.
Yeah, like to me, there seems to be like resignation, like amongst in a lot of counties and amongst a lot of clubs already, that like, well, what's the point in putting this kind of 14th September date in place anyway, when counties are just going to breach it and go training themselves? And I was just looking even at the CPA Twitter account this morning, and there was a couple of retweets from the must have been club players in Meath and Kerry, I saw, to say that, like, there's already clashes between, and these are unsubstantiated, by the way, but already clashes between, you know, nights that the county players want to train or meet up on Zoom and stuff like this, and they're missing club sessions as a result. So, like, I don't know whether I'm missing a point here or something, but I'm just wondering why there can't be a more sensible provision that, like, if it's going to be nearly accepted that counties are going to be training during this period anyway, is there not a provision to say that they could maybe train with their county team one night a week or something like that? And at least then, you know, kind of everyone's on the same page, at least they know that they're doing it, rather than there being such resentment amongst club players that, like, well, they're not meant to be training, but they're training anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just thought that would be more sensible. Maybe there's something that prevents that I'm not seeing.
The important thing, I suppose, is like the Derry model, Conan, in that Rory Gallagher, you know, teams are going to be playing right through August and half of September, guaranteed. So, like, I mean, that kind of syncs up with the September 14th much better. The problem is with counties playing a knockout, straight knockout, which is outrageous, a knockout with one back door, it doesn't sync up with the 14th. So it's on the county board. Because let's be honest here, and I want to break some news to club players listening. County players prefer playing county than club. I'm sorry to break it to you, but they do. It's the ultimate. It is the highest level. That's what they dream about. Like, they love playing with their club. They love it, but they'll never love it as much as playing in Croke Park. Like, I mean, God, let's be honest here. A big championship day with a buzz. So these are the lads that are being torn everywhere in this tug of war. And they are club men and they love their club. I don't doubt that for a second. But, like, if it comes down to a choice, I'm sorry, but the majority of county players that are also club players will choose the county. Because, like, if you've any ambition to be the best player around and the buzz of it, and it's incredible compared. County club football then is a completely different kettle of fish. It's still great in a different way, but it doesn't compare.
Yeah. And, like, ambition is one thing, but it's commitment is the other one, and the amount of time and sacrifice that they're given. I listened to Tomás Roche, and he had an interview with Kieran McGeaney on his new podcast. Listen to it after the GA hour with Trevor Giles.
Of course.
But he was just sort of making that point. It's like, you're giving up so much of your time over the last few years to the county setup, like, you know, because that's the highest standard, that's elite level, and you have to do that. you know, you're not doing that at club level. So it's natural that you're going to want to keep doing that for the county, because that's the standard you need to hit. And now when they're supposed to be training with the club, they're going to want to be training with the county. He was saying the players themselves will want to be out with the county as well, because like they know they're going to have to be doing that if they want to push on, and they haven't made all these sacrifices, eating right, snap right, you know, train right for the last few years just to sort of piss it away and mess around.
Because some players will be with good clubs, with good strength and conditioning, good, you know, training standards, but you'll have a lot of players that won't be, Connor. Like, I mean, and they will fall behind without being in that elite. It'd be like asking the elite Olympians, here, I tell you what, take a break off that, elite training squad, go back to your local club, and then, you know, a couple of weeks before the Olympics, just rejoin that elite squad again. Like, the reality, there are people off their heads here about the reality of this kind of situation.
And I think that's been lost in the whole argument about this. It's been kind of like any kind of point made in favour of the kind of inter-county game, or that supports the resumption of the inter-county game, has kind of been seen as elitist or anything like that. That's not the case. Like, you can as you kind of made the point there, like the club game is still absolutely brilliant as well. But that doesn't mean that, like, you know, that doesn't mean that you just have to abandon inter-county for a season, or whatever, or that inter-county players are just going to abandon their counties in favor, you know, in favor of their clubs either. The two can coexist. And granted, this year is completely different from anyone else, and there has to be kind of concessions made on both sides. But I've noticed that from afar, that's kind of been, I think that's been like inter-county players' desire to play for their county as well as their club has been lost a little bit in this argument.
Yeah, we know this, and we're blue in the face saying it, that county boards are the issue here. Like, it's not necessarily Croke Park. It's not the inter-county players that are being pulled in two directions. This is county boards. And if they all did it like Derry's, where every club's involvement would lead right up or in around September the 14th, then they could move, you know, into the county training. Paul Flynn wouldn't be able to say what he's saying then. He wouldn't be looking for them. The whole problem is county boards. The whole problem is Croke Park not telling county boards a minimum 3 games has to be given to club teams. Organise it. You know, there isn't any leadership on this, and this is the problem. And, like, I mean, this is where the club players are suffering, the inter-county players are suffering. And, of course, I'm complimenting the Derry one, until the point where they've taken right up to the 11 weeks, which I don't agree with. I think they could have played a little bit more ball. We'll get to Joe Brawley's piece in the pay-per-view in part two. They could have played a little bit more ball with Rory Gallagher. But like, I mean, there has to be a balance. And at the moment, let's be honest, Conan, just to wrap up on this, it's an absolute mess. It's a mess because Croke Park are not leading this. And county boards are useless. And we've been saying this since we started the podcast, and I've been saying it since I started in the media. I've been saying it all my life, only I didn't have people to be telling outside of teammates that they are useless and they're not good. It's not good enough. And this is absolute proof that a lot of county boards have not been good enough. And Michael Deignan, you have Barker in Derry, have been good enough. And, you know, why? Because they're strong enough to be able to stand up and say, hang on a minute, I'm in charge here. Now, again, Barker went a bit too far taking the full 11 weeks, but you take my point.
Yeah, Derry have actually, like, just there a couple of days ago, I think it was Friday or day off, they've moved it forward a week now, so their finals are on the 3rd and 4th of October.
I love it. Oh, Stephen Barker, I love him. I absolutely love him.
You must be listening to the podcast, but... Yeah, and like you're right, like you talk before about the professionals in Croke Park. Like it's such a bad way of doing it anyway in any organization, you know, where it's just, you're just delegating, like you sort that out. Like, you know, and that's what they do from Croke Park down to counties. Just, they've got county boards they can look after, but it's madder in this scenario where you've got professionals in Croke Park and experienced people who are then passing it on to, as you say, often amateurs. Do you know what? Yeah. It's like, you know, you just deal with it and everybody's doing their own thing. That's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's a total and utter mess. And the solution will be with Croke Park by imposing sanctions and by maybe telling county boards, you know, in some way, a guideline of what to do. Like, I mean, because they're clearly not doing it right. Dublin's club football, I saw you giving out about this, Conan, there's no promotion or relegation. I don't know if I even get my head around why there wouldn't be. Like, I mean, everyone's in the same boat. You know, like, I mean, there's promotion and relegation in the league in Dublin when you don't have county players for a lot of them. Like, I mean, why would they not just scrap promotion and relegation in the league if there's, you know what I mean? If they were, why are they doing that? It takes a lot of the cutthroat element out of it. And I don't know why they need to do it. Maybe you might have a bit more of an insight into that.
I don't get the thinking. So I can understand maybe like the rationale behind no relegation, because the GAA have been very good to say to people, like, you don't have to play if you don't want to. Don't put yourself under risk if you don't want to. You know, we all understand that everybody's got families and whatever else, so don't play if you're worried about it. So maybe in that sense, they're thinking relegation.
You think that's what they're thinking? Because that could be the situation next year. That could be the situation when three lads on the team are injured and they can't play. You know, I think they're overthinking that.
Well, this is it. So I would sort of think, well, either it's safe to play or it's not. Like, you know, I could break my leg, you know, next year. You know, then, you know, suddenly, should we say there's no relegation because Skerries are down an average wing forward? definitely the no promotion thing is absolute bollocks. But, like, as you say as well, everybody's in the same boat. But I was sort of thinking of this year, of all years, it's probably the time where the championship's going to be at its strongest, because it's segregated, it's not broken up, it's on its own, it's before county. Yeah. You know, there's less of a time window, so you might actually have players coming back who might not have always come back. And, you know, this could be the most accurate reflection you get of a deserving winner. And it's just, especially in Dublin, right? Like, it's harder. I understand that, you know, around the country, there's a lot of, say, like, an intermediate club. Like, you know, there are clubs who are intermediate because of their size and whatever else, but most of the clubs in Dublin are big, with the potential to get bigger. And the sort of format is always just to sort of move through the division. So it's like Senior B is designed to just get into Senior A. It's not really a thing. There's no Leinster. Senior B is made up by Dublin as a sort of holding pattern. So imagine, like, you know, St. Bridget's, who got relegated last year completely, like, you know, out of the blue. They're now in Senior B, probably would have thought, we need to bounce straight back into Senior A. Now they can't, they're Senior B again next year. And, like, you look right down through, like, there's intermediate teams, there's Junior A, B, C, D, E. You know, when if you won the championship this year, it's like, obviously you'd be happy you won the championship, but it's a bad year to win it, because you're just not going to push on like you deserve to. I can't get my head around it. And, like, there's a lot of clubs who are now objecting, and there's some Senior A clubs who are even sort of joining in on that, even though it suits the Senior A clubs, like, because there's no relegation. It's just this sort of bonus territory, but they're sort of lending their support. And then even just from our sort of registration point of view, like, you pay club membership and it's dear, but a lot of that is being paid towards league, which there is none anymore, and it's been paid towards cups, and it's been paid towards a championship, which has now changed, you know. So I can definitely understand, if I was an intermediate team, especially a Senior B team, I would be incensed. Like, you know, what's the point of playing if you can't push on?
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Are they going round robin? They're going round robin and then a semi-final. Is that the way they're doing it?
It's the same setup. So round robin, then quarterfinal, semi-final, and final.
So the structure of it is perfect. It's just, it's not really the relegation. It's the promotion thing really is the big thing for a lot of clubs, which I would agree with. Last one, lads, is David Goff is out. I think there's an element of an attention seeker with David Goff. You know, I've softened on him after that All-Ireland final performance. He was outstanding. But this is, now, wait and I read these quotes to you. This is the greatest load of nonsense I've ever heard. So he's not refereeing this year. He says, as long as there is social distancing still in place, I won't be taking charge of club matches in Meath for the foreseeable future. It's only 2 months since 2 metres seemed to be a life and death matter. If I go to town now, I have to be 2 metres away from someone and wear a face mask at the same time, which is HSE advice. So I don't understand how I can safely be in a confined space with 30 plus people on a football field and be socially distant. Until that changes, I won't be coming back. Now, if you were telling me that a football pitch is a confined space, well, a supermarket might as well be buried underground. Like, I mean, this is ridiculous. Like, a confined space, a GA pitch is the opposite of a confined space. It's out in the bloody air. And 30 people running around a pitch like that can easily, and we were speaking last week, I won't go to you straight away, Conor, on this, because I know you love David Goff. I'll go to Conor. Well, I'm not saying you hate him, but that's a Twitter thing. You either love him or you hate him. You can't just be in the middle anymore on anything. So, like, I mean, this is the way he's worried about a confined space. And then he says the same thing as John Horan says 3 months ago. As long as there's social distancing in place, I won't be doing it. I think John Horan polluted the whole country's minds with that nonsense he spoke on the Sunday game, completely unchecked by Des Cahill in May.
Yeah, well, like, I just wonder about David Goff, that, like, when he will be coming back, because, like, will there not be some sort of social distancing requirement until there is a vaccine? could be wrong on that. So like, if David Goff is taking that stance, it could be a while before he's back refereeing GA games. Like, I don't know, Willie. Like, this is an individual's prerogative. You know, we chatted last week about like what we thought about like referees not being the same as club players, because it's not as if they're marking people. And like, obviously, like, the only times that referees really get close to people, if they pull them into them to book them or something like that. But they don't have to do that. They can book that, but they can do that from a couple of meters away.
Yeah.
But like, this is, I mean, it's his prerogative. I mean, the whole thing, the GAA stance on this is that there's going to be no pressure applied. While no pressure applied to somebody who doesn't feel comfortable, I mightn't necessarily agree with him, but he did mention, you know, stuff about his family members as well, that, you know, that do games and stuff. So he's conscious of them. It's not the stance I take, but yeah, it's his prerogative. So I don't know what else I can really say about that.
Yeah, the family members are standing on two posts. So, like, I mean, I don't think they're high risk either. I just find it very unusual that he would pull out for that, and to say it's a confined space. And if David Goff's so worried about that, how does he go down to the supermarket then? Like, are you telling me you'll queue up with 2 meters apart, but when you're in the actual supermarket, someone can just kind of walk past him? What does he do? Freak out and jump out of the way and jump away two meters? Like, I mean, the reality is that as long as there's social distancing in place, that's best practice. Like, this has practically gone out of the community. I think this is overreacting. I'm a little bit annoyed about it because he's the best referee in the game at the moment. And I just don't see his reasons as being in, again, like Connor says, I'm starting to feel bad now as I'm giving out about him, saying that everybody's entitled to make their own decisions. I actually thought going out and refereeing a game, Conan, would be lower risk than going to the supermarket, because the supermarket is a confined space. And people can just walk past you. Whereas on a football field, Jesus, sure, you're out in the fresh air, and the medical advice has told us that it's very, very low risk out in the fresh air.
Yeah, so what, is it groups of 100 outside? Like, you know, so 30, 31 people in a, what is it, 145 by 90 or something? Or massive areas.
Yeah.
But Connor says up to him or whatever, but I did find it interesting. He said he won't be taking charge of any club games in Meath. Now, he didn't say he wasn't going to be taking charge of any inter-county games, so he still...
No, he did. He confirmed inter-county as being the same, in the same boat.
Ah, for God's sake, I was just thinking, tough shit, me. We'll take him for an inter-county game. But
he couldn't possibly not do one for those reasons and do the other.
Well, you know, maybe a few months down the line, he'll feel a bit better about it all.
Yeah, maybe he'll change his mind. Anyways, listen, again, I have to put the disclaimer in. I said David's entitled to do whatever he wants, and that's fair enough. Right, we'll come back with a paper review.
Somebody said it's as ugly as Marty Moore's here for pots.
We brought him in fairness. He wouldn't know a penalty if it bit him in the arse. I mean,
what is the point of this? They swear allegiance to the cult of Cairn.
But I tell you what, you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
Is managing Mead at some stage for the rest of your life a pebble in your shoe that you want to get out?
No, I think I've got over that.
Have you?
If I went to do that, sure, who'd keep manners on Joe Brawley on the Sunday game? And you couldn't expose the nation to him on his own, could you?
So the Sunday Independent lads are on fire this weekend. So they have the exclusive Dermot Crowe has with Jack McCaffrey. I think Donegal Boyle has the exclusive with David Goff not going to referee. You have another piece on the front from Eamon Sweeney, who is a muppet as far as I'm concerned, so I'm not going to comment on his piece. And then you have the heavy hitters inside the paper, Joe Brawley and Colm O'Rourke, with half a page each, along with Dermot Crowe doing kind of a little bit of a case study on a few different clubs, which is good as well, but I don't think we have time to get into that. We might talk about Brawley and O'Rourke first. I'm going to start with Brawley, as I always do, because I like it, and he was talking about falling out of love. And look, listen, it's elitist stuff, lads. It's not like we haven't read a piece like this from Joe before. He doesn't like the way soccer turned out. He stopped supporting Arsenal in 2004 because of elitism, and there's no connection between supporters and players and the club. And supporters are just seen, you know, they're being used for their money pretty much. And players don't care about the club. They just care about their profession. And, you know, a lot of that I can kind of understand. I'm kind of lost a bit of interest in soccer myself, if I'm being honest, only because it's very hard to sit through 90 minutes of it a lot of the time. Not so much the elitist end of it. But then he starts talking, eventually gets the GEA like a good bit into it. And he starts talking about the dropout rate, which is it's phenomenal, really, some of these stats. He said, so the dropout rate in Gaelic games is a national disgrace. In almost every sport, if a player continues to play until he or she is 20, then he or she is likely to play on until their 30s. Not in our games. The ERSI has found that in hurling and camogie, the dropout rate is 60%. In Gaelic football, it's almost 75%. That is outrageous. He says, think about that. In an association supposedly based on participation, social cohesion, 75% of our young women and men quit in their prime. And then he says, as elitism takes hold, the resulting disconnect means that they'll be switching from participation to fandom. Like, I mean, those stats, like, I mean, it is all connected, Conan, I suppose, to, you know, the programs clubs get. Now, there, I would say a dropout rate in most sports would be high in that age bracket as people go to college, you know, and have other things in their lives.
Like, it's such a tough one because you can't come back from it. Like, part of me thinks that the problem with this dropout in the GA is because it's just so competitive, and you know, no matter how, like, what standards you're at, people want to push on, and a lot of clubs, they only have one or two max, you know, teams, so it's not like you've got so many levels where you can just drop down to, you know. So then, like, it's natural then when you're a club and you've been playing from underage, what can we do, you know, to push on? And, like, you know, people have to go to the gym and they have to train early and they have to, you know, and they're being hounded, you know, from November to October, basically. Yeah. And they've been texted and been told to live right. And I genuinely think that's probably the big thing. But I don't know how you come back from that. Like, the thing, if you're, like, I think Brawley always used the example of soccer. Like, you know, why wouldn't they just go and play soccer on a Sunday morning? But, like, that's easier to do because there's so many soccer teams and you can just play for a Sunday morning league team and not have to train. Yeah. Can't they do that with your club? And there's nowhere else you can go. Like, you, yeah, know, you can't just drop off and play some social GA. There's no such thing. So I just don't know how you come back. In a way, it's a good thing that it's so competitive and it keeps getting better and standards keep going higher. But it's obviously a bad thing as well because people are just thinking, this is too much. It's too much mentally. Something like when I get worn down, it's always mental. It's never physical, but it's just the text messages and stuff like that I feel. But I just don't know how you roll back.
Well, that's a fair point, Connor, which I didn't really think about. So there was one senior team, 30 panel members, and there was one intermediate team or a junior team with 30 panel members. And every year there's 30 people coming up off an under 21 team to join those 60 people. You know what I mean? There isn't room for everybody. Every year you have another 30 coming. Every year you have another 30 coming. Every year you have another 30 coming. And there's only two panels that they can make. So there is going to be a big dropout rate.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it like that much either, but Conan makes a good point about that and it being competitive and just the kind of mental kind of impact it has on you, kind of, and especially when you're doing it year after year as well. I mean, like, the solution to that is far more complex. So, like, the one thing that the GAA can fix, and I like we've mentioned this earlier on, and this comes down to county boards, is that, like, one of the main things that the club players will always say is that, like, because there's no fixed calendar, because, you know, a club player goes into a year looking at the year ahead, looking at the season ahead, and he doesn't know, can't plan ahead, you know, can't plan for holidays, can't plan for big dates or anything like that, because he mightn't hear about them until, you know, like county boards are often at the whim of the county team. So they're like, it's the club player that kind of bears the brunt of that. But, like, that's only kind of one of the reasons. Like, that, the 75% kind of struck me as massive, especially for Gaelic football, until you kind of dig down into it and you think that, like, that dropout rate probably is high at that age group. Like, there's classic stories of how many people who were brilliant minors and then the drink took them or something like that. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I'd say it would be naturally high. Sorry, but I think the only kind of definitive change that they could make to probably alleviate that situation for club players is to fix the calendar first, and then to dive more deeply, sorry, into the reasons that Conan mentioned and why players are getting mentally fatigued and why, you know, to provide more of a social outlet for people who might not be as serious as others.
Yeah, he said in the piece, strikingly, the board did not consult with Rory Gallagher, the senior football manager. They simply informed him. Again, he's talking, saying that as a positive. I think that's outrageous. Again, if we spoke about that last week, I honestly think that is completely out of order, that your county manager, while you go from one extreme of them having too much power to them just being treated like a piece of dirt. Like, I mean, for me, that's not good enough. And it shouldn't be championed as in the right way to do things. Just one other piece from his article, which I thought was very good. He obviously spoke about Derry's structure. He spoke about their county board members and how well qualified they are. Like, I mean, you know, you have an IT director with Stephen Baker. You have a director, the treasurer is Martin Devlin, director of a major enterprise hub. Kieran McCorry is a PRO, an IT consultant who's responsible for the We Are Derry campaign. They're all young fellas in their 30s and 40s. And then there's Kieran McKeever, his old teammate. You know, he is a director of his own construction company. So all these things, lads, like, isn't when you see this, like, fellas who know about running an organization, like, and this is just luck that Derry have got these fellas in place where other counties might have, I don't know, like, I mean, a retired salesman or a retired guard or something who, no disrespect to those professions, wouldn't have any experience of running businesses. And it's just a matter of pot luck a lot of the time of who you get to run the company. But this is what Kieran McKeever told Joe Brolly. And a lot of this is fair enough. He said, we had gone to a bad place, Division 4, because of the disconnect between the county team and the clubs and the county board and the clubs. Everything hangs together. In a small county like ours, we need the clubs to flourish. We need the clubs to be passionate about the county teams. This can only happen if the clubs feel respected and cherished. That makes sense to me, Conan. Like, I mean, there is a huge disconnect in Derry with the county team. I think some of that is due to the football that was played. Some of it is due to club players being so disgruntled by their situation. They're like, they kind of hate the county team because that's their fault and that's the disconnect. And I do think Kieran McKeever makes a good point that if the club players aren't flourishing, they won't love the county team because they'll see the county team has having, you know, been the cause of this.
Yeah, I don't see any part of that kind of thing as well. Whereas I think when the club scene's flourishing, I think you see a lot of Dublin supporters, a lot of just club players that go, but almost feel like, you know, indirectly responsible because you're part of this massive operation that's pushing on these class players. You know, whereas in Derry, like, they had to undergo this whole new restructuring of their junior teams because they had cut off. There was only six clubs at junior level for a while. You know, so there was a lot of clubs that were just getting cut off, whereas they've done a lot of good work over the last few years, but you don't have to go that far back to remember the days, you know, where everyone in the game was just as disgruntled with the Derry board as it would have been with any other county. And you say sometimes it's pot luck. And like, but I think Brawley in that piece mentioned Stephen Barker, you know, playing in his 20th year for Moneymore. And like, you know, he's a brilliant goalkeeper and everybody would recognise Stephen Barker and they'd have fond memories of him playing. And like, he became secretary of his club, you know, when he was a teenager and then became chairman when he was 24, 25 or whatever. So, you know, these boys have just sort of been there at the grassroots level and everyone sort of in the club scene knows them. And, you know, Kieran McCrory, you mentioned, great lad. And then I suppose when these people are now running the county board, then, yeah, it's probably natural that you feel part of it. And then hopefully, like, you know, maybe this year, maybe next year, you'll start to see that reflected in the support for the county team.
Colin O'Rourke has a piece there as well. He says, farce follows tragedy in club county power play. A lot of this is stuff we've covered already, so I'm not going to go too much into it. He kind of contradicts himself here. He says, Croke Park can hardly be blamed for this mess. The leadership set out their stall and provided the windows, which seemed fair and reasonable, withdrew insurance for county teams and told county boards to do what they're supposed to do, look after their clubs. You know, and then he just says a little bit longer, a little bit further down. Of course, Croke Park officials could call in chairpersons and tell them to do their job, but there must be sanctions if this is to work. So, like, Croke Park can be blamed then, Colin. I'm not really sure what he's saying there. And then he, you know, takes a pot at the GPA. He says this was also an ideal opportunity for the GPA to call on members to abide by the rules. Instead, the best it could do was look after the insurance to be reinstated earlier so counties could officially resume before the September date. Again, I don't think it's fair to put this onto the players. It's not fair for Colin O'Rourke to ask the GPA to do that. Right, listen, don't train with your county and embarrass yourself on the big games a month later. Stick with your club. Like I've said, county players don't want to do that. They would take the county one day a week if they could, any day of the week, just to stay in that high performance environment. Like, I mean, why does everybody say Dublin have an advantage over everybody else? Because of sports science and money, you know, and all the advantages that they have. you're just completely contradicting that argument if you're saying that club training is preparation for intercounty. It's completely illogical, isn't it?
I think he went. Colin O'Rourke nearly went out of his way to have a dig at the GPA. He's no fan of the GPA. I think anyone who reads his columns regularly will know that. But I kind of agree with you, Willie, there when he said putting it on the players. I didn't really agree with that. He made some good points about the CPA and maybe clubs just taking, being stronger about this whole situation. But he used one line as well. He's on about the caliber of people who play inter-county GAA and not sticking up for their clubs to say in front of, their county manager, well, I'm saying I'm going to stick with my club here. That's a lot of pressure to put on somebody. If you're
madness. It's not going to happen. Even the most comfortable fellas on a squad would be uncomfortable, putting it up to the county manager like that.
Yeah, he said players who lack courage in times of peace won't have it in war. It's a good line, but it's a bit unfair on even as you said, even the most established player would have an issue with saying that in front of an entire dressing room.
And another thing, Connor, they don't want to say it for starters because they love playing with the county. They're dreaming about this October start date of these big games. I don't know if people have a proper understanding of this at all.
Yeah, well, as I said, I think this is kind of getting lost in it. In a good way, I suppose, the plight of the club player has been highlighted a lot in the last few weeks. But at the same time, there hasn't been an awful lot of focus on what it means to the county player. Were people asking county players what they would have thought of if as some suggested, the inter-county championship should just be abandoned completely and focus on club? Do you know what I mean? Which is unfair. And this kind of there's parts of this piece as well, which I would deem unfair on inter-county players too.
And that's the thing. And most people are in agreement that nobody wants games behind closed doors because the intercounty game, wouldn't be the same. But that's what most club games are like, Colin. These are behind closed doors games with no huge buzz or excitement about it outside of, pride in the parish. But again, I'll repeat myself, they cannot compare to Kerry, Cork, Iparki, Keeve, and they can't, for players now I'm talking about. Colin O'Rourke trying to put this on the players to stand up to county manager. They don't want to. They don't want to do it.
Yeah. How can you compare that? As you say, Kerry, Cork, Parky Keeve under lights, knockout. Donegal, Tyrone, Croke Park, maybe under lights, knockout. It's just different level. And again, the fact that these players know that they're going to be knocked out or they could be knocked out after one game, they don't want to risk anything here at this stage. And let alone just for standing up in the club dressing room. And should Paul Flynn not be applauded for bringing a bit of realism and a bit of pragmatism to this rather than just going along with the bullshit? He knows the club teams or county teams are going to try and get back early, so why not actually address that head on?
Yeah. Now, look, it's not like a complete defence of the GPA. The GPA have the power to have fixed this whole structure long ago if they really had the bottle to do it, and they're still floundering around this. You know what I mean? We know the GPA... they got the grants through. They have the power of the county game, which is the cash cow of the GAA. And if they force through a restructure and said either trash this out, get it sorted, or there'll be no National League next year, it would be done. And we wouldn't be going year after year, And I think this year, the one thing this year has shown us, Conan, is that the inter-county game could run from March until the end of July. And then every year, every club championship starts on the 1st of August, maybe barring the All-Ireland champions who'd start a week later. And the All-Ireland club season runs right into the middle of December with All-Ireland semi-finals and finals in Croke Park, in good weather, in good underfoot conditions. I think this year has shown that one can end at the end of July, and it's a good blueprint of seeing how most counties can get theirs run, by mid-September. October, then we're looking, at provincial club championships and maybe November then as well. Although if it started at the start of July with All-Ireland club finals in the middle of December, every county could have round robins, guaranteeing three games.
Yeah, there's just an awful lot of faffing around that drags that out. Even I know a lot of people were complaining about the club, no Leinsters and no Ulsters and no All-Irelands for the clubs. And they were blaming the small window that the county teams have been given. But I'm sort of looking at that going, what's happening in January? What happens in January again? We go back to McKenna Cup and all this rubbish that could just be taken out. You actually could have an opportunity of having your your club provincials and club All-Irelands in January, February, and it would end exactly the same way it ends normally. Do you know, but they're not doing that because they want to go back to this stupid season, like that they have so much crap thrown into and it's spread out over 10 months.
Yeah, and while Paul Flynn seems to be a strong enough GPA leader, they haven't flexed their muscles regarding a strike since the grants, which they successfully got through. And that was much more controversial because the grassroots didn't want it was seen as pay for play. Anyways, we'll have to move on here to Sunday Times. Michael Foley has a couple of pieces in there. I'm not going to get into it because we're running out of time here. Line of Duty is the name of the piece, and Colm Hawkins' murder reopens wounds for a community in Mayo who lost two other Gardaí in 1980. Conor, unless you have something to add about that one, I'm not really sure what we can say about that, if we're being honest. There was obviously a terrible tragedy. What happened, Colm Hawkins?
Yeah, just to say, just because I feel I should mention it, because the two other guards mentioned in the piece, Henry Byrne and John Morley, both played for my own club, for Kelchma.
Oh, very good.
So that happened, that obviously happened in 1980, so a long time ago now. So, but they were commemorated in a memorial tournament that used to take place in Kelchma right up until 2010. So it was always a huge deal, and it was always a huge deal in the parish. But the guards always used to send down a team, like a really good team as well, made up of local guards from, you know, Mayo, Galway, that direction, and like the really competitive games, and really meant a lot to our club until the last ever one was 2010, and there was a plaque unveiled to Henry Byrne and John Morley that still stands in our club gym. It was unveiled by the Garda commissioner on the day. So just when you mentioned that piece, just to mention the Kelchimar angle to it, but as well as that, I just thought that the piece on Colin Morgan was really nice and just got to the heart of the impact he kind of made on the local community, and how much of a shock it really was that down in Mayo here for when the news was revealed there a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, great stuff. So in the Irish Mail on Sunday, Philip Lanigan talks to Turlough O'Brien, and the minute I saw this, I went, how long do I have to read before Turlough starts giving out about the tier two? And the answer was maybe two thirds in, which was grand. I was reading it away, and that was fine. I just know this is coming, and bang, here we go. So I think there's a good lesson here for everyone, and I go back to tier two competition. So, you know, he didn't need to be prompted on it. everybody can compete if they're given the tools to do it. Yeah, if you drop 15 men inside your 45, they can compete, he said. But this hiving off of counties into a tier two competition, I feel it will do more long-term damage. When you look at professional sport and how they can take actions, positive discrimination, if you like. In the NFL, where they have the draft for the weakest team, UEFA are supposedly doing financial fair play. Here we are, a volunteer amateur organisation, and we don't seem to be able to imagine other ways of doing things. I was just reading that, and I was thinking, Conor, like, we can't even get Croke Park to put sanctions on county boards who blatantly flaunt their dates and rules. Like, will we set up a draft system? We won't. Will we introduce financial fair play? Not a chance of it. Will we pool Dublin's sponsorship money? Not a bloody hope of it. They won't even hold county boards to account for not running their championships properly for their club players. Like, I mean, Turlough, in a way, he's right, kind of things he's saying, but like, Christ almighty, that's complicating things.
Yeah, no, completely. Like, I'd have different views from Turlough on the Tier 2 Championship anyway. And when I was reading it earlier, I was kind of comparing it with a piece that was in the Mail, I think it could have been last week or the week before, that Cara Healy did. And I thought it was really interesting, as somebody who is also would potentially be involved in a tier two championship, and his view on it is completely different and be way more aligned to mine, in that, like, that, you know, he didn't see the point of it, and that, like, you're competing. A tier two championship is made up of counties who don't want to be in it, basically. And they're only in it because, you know, by default, after losing a game and stuff like that. And how at the start of the year do you motivate players who want to be in a tier two championship, because they're doing their best to avoid it, but then they're in it and then they have to win, basically. But I was thinking the same thing when I was reading it. I was like, geez, we're going on a bit long here, and he still hasn't mentioned tier two. Like, there it is. So he's still not letting it lie a few months or a couple of weeks after he's let it go. But
I thought it was good. I thought he was bang on. But we're not going to get into it, will we?
Go on, continue.
No, I just I uh, I do agree with him, but I did think it was funny because it was almost like it was out of nowhere. I was sort of expecting like Philip Lanigan to be like, Turlock, I was asking you about Jack McCaffrey. What's this got to do with Tier 2? Why are you bringing this up?
Well, the proof will be in the pudding when we see Tier 2 in 10 years' time and how the counties, you know, have you know, developed within it and are they enjoying it and things like that, I suppose. It's either his opinion at the moment because it's untested or my opinion or Conan's opinion or whatever. He did mention that Ray Walker testing positive for a performance-enhancing drug. He said, for me, it was the lowest point, to be honest. There's flaws in the system in terms of education. The players have up until the 31st of March to complete their training and the National League starting in January. It needs to be looked at. And we said that on the show here, lads, that definitely needs to be looked at. And he finished up by saying, I never seen or heard anything in Gaelic football that would cause concern. I would hope that would always be the way. Overall, Ireland has very good records in terms of individuals' responsibilities towards their sport. And again, I agree with that, Conan. You know, the likes of Paul Kimmage won't agree with it because, you know, people have to be doping for him to, you know, be more relevant. But I don't think the culture is there in Ireland. If there are individual cases the odd time, that's fair enough. The GAA has had pretty much an exemplary record since the start of testing, outside of one or two fellas that haven't really been on county panels. Their culture's not there amongst county panels. I'm very confident of that. And while we all need to keep our eyes open, it's not something that we have to be overly worried about.
Yeah, I was just going to ask about the actual training, you know, the anti-doping training, because I don't know about you, Connor, but like, you know, this the COVID-19 sort of return to play training that you have to do, like, I know, like I did and everybody else did, they're just flying through trying to get this module over with, and you get asked five questions at the end and you have to get four right, and if you get them wrong you can do it again. Like, you know, it's basically you're just doing it because you have to do it. So I don't, like, you know, I don't know how much I took in that I already like didn't know from what's going on in the public anyway. So I'd like, did you ever have to do training, Willie? Like, you know, anti-doping training or anything like that? Like, I don't know how effective it would be.
I don't think we did training. We had a doctor speaking to us and we were given a leaflet with all the banned substances, which you were supposed to cross-reference against anything that you took. Well, you were told not to take anything that the doctor didn't tell you to take and you had to run it past him, but you were given a leaflet as well. I followed it. Like, I asked the doctor about anything. My inhaler, I had to fill out a form because I'm an asthmatic that had to be sent up to Croke Park to make sure I wasn't just puffing out of an inhaler the day of the game, which for someone who can breathe properly probably would be a bit of an advantage. But like, I mean, if you have asthma, it's just to relieve the symptoms of it or whatever. But there's paperwork to have to fill out. Yeah, it's definitely. And that was back. Sure, that was back in the mid-noughties, you know, when I was doing that kind of stuff. So, like, I mean, I'm sure that goes on now. The issue is fellas just joining a squad at a certain time of the year when that training might fall through the cracks, you know, and they're landing in January. The training isn't until March and they've got 2 months of buying powder over the internet or whatever to do. I don't know. Like, well, you'd want to be stupid no matter what if you're joining the county panel to be doing that, because they all have doctors that it's only a matter of asking. And we'll have to move on there, lads, because like I said, we're gone way over the time as usual. Pat Spillane in the Sunday World: the first signs of action at long last. Thankfully, common sense have prevailed. The GAA have accepted a new normal, which involves balancing risk with reward. There's not too many talking points I could find out of this, if I'm being honest. Outside of the fact, he said, the GAA is my drug of choice. It's part of my DNA. It's what gives me my high. It's the live action I crave. Watching old classic matches, even those involving Kerry, simply doesn't float my boat. I'm not going to lie, we did loads of nostalgia games, which I enjoyed, but when you know the score in a game, it's just not the same. Like, it's just not the same. And even re-watching a game, I don't like doing, if I'm not trying to do some analysis from behind the goals or whatever like that. But he has another little small piece here, a revised list, a mixed bag. And he's talking about, unlike Kerry, for example, who don't have to worry about relegation, Tyrone need every point. Their two remaining ties are against Donegal and Mayo, and they face Donegal again in the first round of the Ulster Championship, all in the space of 3 weeks. And both the Donegal games are scheduled for Ballybofey. And I suppose that just kind of shines a light on why the Tyrone Club Championship is a knockout. Like, I mean, you know, that's a horrendous start to the year for them, Conor.
Yeah. Oh.
Go ahead, Connor.
I was just about to say absolutely. And he makes the point, I think we brought up Westmeath earlier on as well, and kind of makes the point about how their situation compares to some of the others. And actually, he brings up, because I think he was saying, and this has been brought up in a few kind of articles over the weekend as well, that the GAA missed an opportunity with an open draw. And Pat was just pointing out some of the counties why. I think Cavan or Monaghan, for example, had to win. I think they'd have to win four games just to get to a semi-final, whereas the likes of, I know we mentioned Cork and Kerry earlier on, but they have to win two. So just kind of outlined the kind of difficulties facing some counties. But he did throw in a Joni Mitchell quote. You'd be delighted to know.
He did actually.
I think he missed out on the quotes last week, so he must have heard you saying you were disappointed.
Who had money on Joni Mitchell? I didn't.
No, Pat would pull them out of nowhere. I highlighted that, I completely forgot. So he says, "So too, my beloved GAA. A line from Joni Mitchell's song sums up my feeling perfectly. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone?" I even sang it for you. Brilliant. Pat, well, there was one week he had about eight quotes in the same piece, wasn't it? We were slagging him for using up the word count, but he'd only won this time. But it was definitely left field, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, we should actually do like a sort of sweepstake to see what's going to be next on this coach.
he did say one other thing, and it's a common kind of, I don't know, perception people have. He says there's pluses, of course. This is to the knockout system. The knockout formula hands a small added advantage to the weaker counties. At least now they have some chance of pulling off a shock result and making it stick. How does it increase their chance of pulling off a shock result? Would somebody mind telling me? Because they're in the Leinster Championship anyways. And if they win, they go to the next round. They cause a shock. The other team goes into the qualifiers. The chances that they're going to meet each other later in the championship, a weaker team continue on to meet the stronger team again, impossible. Like, I mean, Colin, I don't know. Like, some people say that, oh, you know, on a one-off game, but they're one-off games anyways. There's just a back door. You know what I mean? And generally, the weaker county might pull off a shock result and then get beaten in the next round because they're a weaker team.
Yeah.
I don't understand the concept of how the knockout will suit a weaker team over a back door for them.
No, because I actually don't think that whole thing or that chat and narrative is about weaker counties. I think it's just it increases the stakes for the stronger county, you know, so then if they lose.
Yeah.
I remember Astor Stocknield got their first All-Ireland final. They lost the first round in Derry, but it was underwhelming because, like, they weren't out, you know, so it's like, that's the beauty of it. Like, you know, like, yeah, Carlow beating Kildare. Carlow weren't going to go on and win Leinster. But it's Kildare should be out, but they're not out. They can go on and get back into the Super Eights.
That's the beauty of it. It's like Armagh against Monaghan that year. You know, it's defending champions Armagh out. You know, like, I mean, it is more to do with the risk for the stronger counties than any sort of advantage for the weaker counties. It's not an advantage for the weaker counties. Look at poor Westmeath. They'll tell you what it's like. In the Sun, then, lads, to finish up, they did a piece on Ballymun Kickhams, a club we've definitely talked about. And Ballymun Kickhams have no excuses this year. So we know the talent that they have. And we know every year they are hamstrung by their six best players, elite players, very, very top players coming back a week, usually, because Dublin have done five in a row, right? So they're always coming back a week after playing in an All-Ireland final. They've got bumps, they've got bruises. The interview, it was Paul Keane, is this piece, the headline is "Looking After Number Mun," right? So you love that one, right? So clubs first campaign could help kick us on. So Paddy Carter, ex-manager who managed them in 16 and 17, he says, "For those 2 years I was there, 2016-17, three of the four players who had started the All-Ireland finals for Dublin came back carrying significant injuries. They were unable to do anything really until the games themselves, and with the best will in the world, they weren't 100%. So Ballymun Kickhams really need to shit or get off the pot here, because we know they should have won an All-Ireland club in 13. They won the county final in Dublin in 12, should have beaten Bridges. They're 8 or 9 points off, but brilliant comeback by Bridges in fairness. But Ballymun Kickhams will be kicking themselves. Since then, they lost the 13 final after replay to Vincent's. This is after being 5 points up in injury time in the drawing game. So they really made a balls of that. Vincent's got 1-2 to draw it and beat them in the replay. In 2014, they lost the quarter final to Plunkett's. 2015, lost the second round to Vincent's. 16, lost the semi-final to Vincent's. 17, lost the final to Vincent's. 18, lost the quarter final to Jude's. And then they were knocked out in the round robin last year, Conor. So it looks on paper like they're going completely backwards. Vincent's had their number, but they get a clear run at this club championship now with all their players committing, you'd imagine, minimum 2 days a week. And listen, if we're being honest, you'd imagine they're going in with Dublin one night a week. That's unconfirmed.
And again, everybody on the same page. I was sort of thinking, is it harsh that we expect Ballymun to win all the time? Because Ballyboden, Crokes and Vincent's, they're all class teams as well. But the like of Vincent's, like, you go through their team, they're just a really, really class club team. And like, Ballymun just haven't had the opportunity to create that for their own team. And you look at their 2017 final, like the difference was a goal. And Philly McMahon actually gave the ball away around, 50 metres out. And just one pass, and it's just ruthless. Like, that's what Vincent's do, but that's what they can work on because they're only ever missing Dermot Connolly. Whereas you're throwing in third of the team into the Ballymun team. This is the time now where Vincent's haven't had 15 league games and all these friendlies. They're all going in now to a championship on the same level.
Yeah, and the problem with Ballymun is that their players are so versatile. They never know where to play their good players. Like, Philly McMahon could be cornerback, he could be midfield, he could be centre-back. John Small seems to have settled on centre-back, but he could be wing-back. If James McCarthy, centre-back, midfield, I think he might have played centre-forward at one stage. They don't know what to be doing with their very best players, which is a huge hamstring when you're only getting the back a week before a match, Connor. So they will be able to settle on. I think James McCarthy has to play midfield. I think playing Philly McMahon in the corner is madness at his age now, because Philly has no interest in having to mark somebody now. I think Philly should be, I'd play Philly and James McCarthy potentially in midfield. But again, they don't have the time to experiment with this, Connor, because they're just being landed back in with these fellas.
It's only really, of those players you mentioned, it's like only really Dean Rock that would have had a fixed position in the full forward line. I'm not sure they ever tried him out.
He's played centre forward for them.
So even Dean Rock then, they haven't got a settled position for him either. And that's what happens, as you said, when they're coming back. Not only are they involved with Dublin for half the year, but then they're just physically and mentally exhausted. So they're not, they're some sort of a shadow of themselves when coming back for Ballymun as well. I just wonder, after all this, then will Dublin have the excuse this year that the Ballymun lads were wrecked from their exertions with the club activity, that they couldn't make it happen for Dublin in the county championship? Ends to be seen.
I know, it depends if they make a county final, they could go back in. Like, I mean, that's the one, that probably Desi Farrell, that's the one club he doesn't want to make a county final, because he's not going to have them, until a later point. I don't know, what date is the county final fixed for? Is it the 20th of September, Conan?
I think you're right, 20th of September, and like, or whatever that weekend is. And Desi Farrell then has to try and work six Ballymun lads in his Dublin team. It's going to be chaos.
Yeah, no, it will be complete chaos. Come here to finish up. This was a lovely little one. Sleeve it with me in the sun. A little small piece down along the side. So Trevor Giles has explained that the origin of his iconic sleeveless look was a trip to Australia. He told the GER that he was inspired by the AFL's jerseys, and with 1999 being an unusually hot summer in Ireland, he made alterations to his kit. We never get any papers picking up on anything that we ever do. Like, I mean, I understand the game. I understand that that's, you're not going to do stuff like that. So whenever I see a piece that the Examiner has had the odd one or two, not that I can't really remember too many other ones. Whenever I see a piece like that, I feel delighted. I'm delighted with the Sun. Jeez, that's very nice, just to pick up a small little quote with an outstanding headline, Conan, like, sleeve it with me. You can't beat a tabloid silly headline.
But it's just a shame, wasn't it? They had to bring in Trevor Giles to get it. It couldn't just be Colin Parkinson said on the GA.
No. I'm not expecting that. If you do an interview with one of the big names, if it's newsworthy, they still don't pick them up. It can get a little bit frustrating. I'm not expecting my nonsense to ever get picked up.
Yeah. Colin Parkinson says David Goff is talking rubbish about not going back.
Parkinson calls out Goff as an attention seeker. Oh, no, but maybe attention seeker was a bit harsh there at the start of that. I'm starting to feel bad about that now. Connor, anything to add?
You need Conan to send out more press releases on your behalf, Willie. That's
yeah, exactly right, lads. We'll leave it there. That's me done. I'm gone for 3 weeks, so enjoy when the cat's away there. You can do whatever you want, lads. I don't care. And that's it. And sure, we'll be right back into club action, I suppose, when I get back into the mix. So that's it. Best of luck, lads, and thanks very much. I'll be talking to you in 3 weeks, and the lads will be talking to you very soon. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd still go. And so I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. but it's harder to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.